God's grace and peace be with you. You could use a little grace and peace after readings like this. This passage is the epitome of the definition of the gospel, which we learned in seminary, the purpose of the gospel is to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. And that's what it does. Comforts the afflicted and afflicts the comfortable. Lots of tension in this passage, partly because it's so daggone clear. I know last week's parables from Jesus was one of those, like, what did that mean? You know, it's you have to really dig it out. This one seems pretty clear. It's that tension between wealth and want and how we live with that. Still a pretty relevant question, and one likely to trigger a lot of emotional response, especially in communities like ours. We struggle with the realities of this call from Jesus, which is a mirror of the call of the prophets all the way through the Old Testament. And one of the first things it confronts us with is the truth that God's definition of justice is not the same as our definition of justice. And so when the reign of God breaks in and confronts us with God's understanding of justice, it challenges us. Because we tend to live with, you know, these ideas that you work hard and you create a comfortable life for you and your family, and that is good and right. Which we can perhaps assume this is what the rich man does. We never learn his name. Have you ever noticed that? We know the name of the poor man who suffers. We never know who the rich man is. I wonder if that's because it's supposed to be any of us, all of us. I don't know. But at any rate, we deal with this tension in this because the gospel says to us the primary definition of justice is not you get what you deserve, but the primary definition of justice in the kingdom of God is wholeness for all people. There is no conversation or discussion about why Lazarus is poor. There is no excuse. There's no blame. There's no mention at all. There's nothing about why he is suffering. Just the reality that he is suffering. And there is a barrier between him and that which can relieve his suffering. The gate, right? The gate in this life, in the afterlife, a chasm between the rich man's suffering and Lazarus. So this is always, this whole parable is about these barriers, these things that prevent us from reaching across to each other. And these conversations are still very, very real. I was studying for this commentary, and one of the folks who was reflecting on it talked about the time that they visited the White House several years ago. They visited the White House in Washington, D.C., and they were just being overwhelmed with the beauty of the place and the power and the, you know, kind of this awe, sense of awe of being there. But then they noticed around the gate, around the White House, which is, you know, a good distance away from the building itself, all along the gate, there were people sleeping on the sidewalk in dirty blankets. And this commentator talked about the tension in that juxtaposition, right? The gates that keep people sleeping on the sidewalk. And they noted that a few years after that, the White House did take some action on that. They made it illegal to sleep there, as well as on the warming grates in the metro station. So they responded by, well, putting up more barriers. Marty talks about, my husband, talks about his church growing up. Because, see, one of the things about this parable, it's not just about individuals and money, but it's also about institutions and money, communities of people. Marty talks about his church growing up in Iowa, and it was in a town that was a pretty solid middle-class neighborhood when he was growing up, but like many towns, that neighborhood began to see some change. Economic change and demographic change. But the congregants in that church remained pretty much the same people who had attended there when he was growing up, even though the neighborhood around them was dramatically different. And the neighborhood around them began to lose its economic stability. and became more of a struggling community, and the church decided to respond to that. They put up a fence around their playground so the people from the community couldn't use it. It's easy to sit here and be judgmental, but we are always called to look at the ways that we are building barriers between ourselves in this world, as opposed to seeing the way that the reign of God transforms our relationships with one another. Are there ways that we set up barriers between us and others? Whether we're the ones in, the ones in need are usually not the ones setting up the barriers. The ones who have what they need are usually the ones setting up barriers, whether it's an individual or an institution. And the gospel is always going to challenge us on this. Always. There's no way around it. It starts way back with Amos and Micah and all of the Old Testament prophets who are constantly lifting up God's definition of justice, which tends to be different from what we hear today. And it runs all the way through the New Testament, where Jesus consistently goes outside the gate. He goes outside the gate to the people who are covered in sores, and who are hungry, and who are sick, and who are dying. Those who should not be touched in polite society. Jesus is always going outside the gate. And we're called to take up our cross and follow. I was thinking the other day about how the church lives this out. I was chatting with my brother and talking about, you know, the struggles that the church faces in today's day and age, how institutional denominational churches are declining in number, and the changing context of our life together in communities of faith. And I heard myself saying to my brother, I said, you know what? I think I've decided I never again want to put up a sign that says, come join us. Because I sort of feel like it's the rich man telling Lazarus, well, clean up your act and come in. You're welcome. And I don't think the church should be saying, come join us anymore. I think the church needs to be saying, where can we meet you? Where can we meet you? That's what the church needs to be saying. Where can we meet you? Are you hungry? Where can we meet you? Do you need a job? Do you need education? Where can we meet you? Are you aging and struggling to figure out where you're going to live as you grow older and be safe? Where can we meet you? Are you struggling with mental illness? Where can we meet you? Are you wrestling with addiction? Where can we meet you? That's a completely different message from come join us. Because come join us seems to imply come and be like we are. But Lazarus cannot be like the rich man. It's going to need the rich man meeting Lazarus. And that's where the reign of God breaks in. Those of you who are here regularly have heard me preach in the last year about the liminal spaces, the borderlands, the borderlines, where Jesus is always the most active. And once again, we're on a border. We're in a liminal space. That gate between the rich man and Lazarus, that's liminal space. That chasm between the rich man and Lazarus in the afterlife, that's liminal space. And see, the good news that we have is that we now have a way to cross that. We have a way to cross it because Jesus has crossed it for us and created the way. Jesus has made it possible for us to live a new reality with one another. To know that we are so loved by the God who crossed the chasm of death to meet and claim us, that we can cross any chasm to love and claim one another for life. And that's our calling. Jesus said that to us. He did not say to us, clean up your act and come join me. He said to us, where can I meet you? Oh, I know where I can meet you. I can meet you here. That's where he met us. And so now our call is to have the power and the love and the courage to say, where can we meet you? And that's a message that people will hear. And they'll see why it is we gather in this space every Sunday. Jesus has crossed the chasm for us and gives us the power to be the same. Thanks be to God.